Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
I would really like you guys to take a moment, close your eyes, and think about what happens inside of you when your partner starts in with "you always" or "why can't you?" If you're like most of us, you probably get that feeling of "I'm being attacked," and your defenses go up and you either defend yourself or you counterattack. But however you respond, I can pretty much make bet that you're headed straight for an argument. This is why I advise my clients to never use "you," the word "you," in the first three words of a sentence unless it's "I love you," "you're wonderful," or "I'm glad you're in my life." I'm also told that this is the most difficult suggestion I ever make. So to learn about some other ways to address arguments, I'm joined by communication expert Leslie Shore. She is the author of Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. Leslie, thanks for coming on the show and helping my listeners figure out how to communicate more effectively.
Leslie, it's totally my pleasure.
You know, it's really funny because that's one of the things, one of the two things that people come to me with. Either they've grown apart, or they come in and they tell people, or they tell me that they don't communicate. And in the back of my head, I'm being this, you know, little cynical little person going, "Oh, no, you communicate. You just don't like what the other person is saying."
And the reality is that you're absolutely right. They are communicating, but it's different. At the beginning of a relationship, we attend to the other person because we really want to get to know them. And we listen to likes and dislikes and history and family dynamics and dreams and fears. And we spend hours discovering each other, and no fact is too small and no story is too long. And it's very cool because as you're beginning the relationship, there are lots of surprises. But then we get familiar.
Yeah.
Whether it's a marriage or a long-term relationship, there's so many things that begin to take away our time and time to connect and parenting issues and work and all that kind of stuff. So what happens is what our communication was has now morphed into something different, and we're not even understanding that it's changed.
Right. I talk about it turning into informational exchange, where you're maybe talking to each other for a couple of minutes, 5 minutes tops, where, "Hey, I'm coming home late. I've got to go pick up, you know, Susie's got a soccer practice." I mean, we're just kind of exchanging information as opposed to really having those deep and meaningful conversations that we had when we first got together, as you were so eloquently stating. But, you know, what, because your book is titled Listen to Succeed, so what is it that is so challenging about listening?
Well, there are a couple things. One is that being humans, we have an ego. And when we are trying to listen to someone else, we're actually processing what we're hearing through our history and our experiences. And our ego loves to kind of jump up and say, "Oh, I have something that I can say to that." And so there's interruptions. And what we end up having is that instead of listening to the other person as purely as possible, taking it in without what I call the film of ego over it, we're just not doing that. We're not pushing our ego aside, and truly we are not being really present and in the moment 100% for the other person.
And yeah, that's one of the things I tell people. It's like we hear enough to form our response, And then we kind of stop listening to whatever it is they're saying, which means that we might actually be missing the most essential thing the other person is trying to get across.
I can't tell you how embarrassing that is, and we've all done it, where we have stopped listening in order to formulate a reply. And my grandmother, wise woman that she was, said, listen without judgment and wait for the period at the end of the sentence before formulating a reply. But that takes practice, and especially in America, where we do not like silence, we feel obligated to make sure that the moment that person finishes what they're saying, we can jump in. But that's really not the best way to listen.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of the skills that I'm sure you're familiar with, reflective listening. And I tell people, nobody has a conversation this way. Absolutely nobody has a conversation. But, you know, I tell people, it's like, you have to be able, you'll know you have listened, really listened, when you can repeat back what the other person has said to you. And, you know, I always tell people, have you ever played the game of telephone? Because we listen with filters. I'm already interpreting what I'm hearing based on what I think you're going to say without actually really stopping and going, is that what you're saying? And, you know, when my husband and I sometimes will get, you know, crosswise with each other, it's kind of like, okay, hang on a minute. I was with you to this point, and then somehow I got confused. Can we back up and go from there? Because I've missed something.
That's wonderful to have something in place. My parents used to call timeouts when, for some reason, they were at cross purposes. But you have a tool that's kind of like, whoa, stop here. Let's rewind the tape a little bit, and let's get some clarity as to what it is that you're saying.
Yeah, we have this, years ago, we were out riding our bikes, and we were on some country road, and we were separated from each other, and I saw something up in the sky, and I asked if that was a crane, like the bird, and he said, a plane, and I said, a whooping crane, and he said, a moving plane, and so we were, and so whenever we get across purposes, it's like one of us will say, whooping crane, moving plane, you know, because we had this experience, and it makes it so much easier, obviously, if you can laugh about it, because sometimes it's very, very hard to recognize that I just didn't hear what you were trying to say to me.
Right, and there are other things in terms of listening barriers that can get in the way. One of them is what I call external barriers. If I'm having a conversation with someone in a restaurant, and I'm facing out into the restaurant, and I can see what's happening, forget about it. I cannot listen effectively. So I end up always facing the wall, and that really helps my ability to concentrate and listen well. And those are things that can get in the way. And one of the other things that's huge is emotions and emotional trigger words that sometimes
absolutely
we are not even aware of what they are.
Well, but I love your talking about being distracted in the restaurant, because years ago I had somebody, I was doing a talk, and they came up to me, and I love when people say this, can you explain my husband to me? I'm like, okay, here we go. But she was really upset because he kept walking. He was doing something in the bathroom, trying to fix the faucet or something. And he kept walking through the kitchen to the garage where his tools were and ignoring the empty pizza box that was sitting on the counter. And she got so frustrated that she just put the pizza box on the floor in his, you know, way of walking. And then, of course, he got mad. And she was really upset because, well, why didn't he see the pizza box? And I said, because he was focused on something else. And you know, I joke with, because I have a son too, but I joke with my husband and my son that if, you know, there's something that I need to say to one of the two of them that's important, it's like, okay, stop what you're doing and look at me. And if it's really important, I make my son repeat it back. But because they're distracted. But you talk in your book about the difference between the way men and women communicate.
Yes, and before I get there, there is one thing that you just brought up, and that is multitasking. And the reality is that multitasking is a myth. You really can't do two cognitive things at the same time and do either well. So if her husband was totally focused on what he was doing, he's not going to be looking and observing for things he can pick up on the way to the garage. He is totally focused. And good for him, because multitasking really, really does not work, to be honest with you. So when we get to men and women, oh boy.
I know. I just laugh. It's like, okay, let's unpack this whole thing.
It's so interesting that it literally is because of how we are hardwired. As women, we are hardwired to be the nurturers. After all, we're the ones who give birth, and we're the ones who take care of the infant and toddler and, you know, you name it, all the way up. Not that the male does not, but if you take a look at the percentage of time and how long it goes on, there's no question that women are the nurturers, and as a result, how they communicate is in a very nurturing way. Lots of details give you the emotion that's behind what they're thinking is. So it's a longer and less bullet-pointed way of talking. And that's okay when you're talking to another woman who does understand that.
Right.
But if you're talking to a man who happens to be your husband or your boyfriend or your boss, who is expecting, hey, I just want the bullet points. If I need more information under a particular bullet point, I will ask you. And it's very, very difficult for women to stop on a dime, rewire their brains in that instant to do that. It takes actually quite a bit of practice.
Right. But I think a lot of what gets us into trouble is thinking that the other gender is going to process information the same way that I do. And
exactly.
That's really, I mean, and one of the things I also tell my clients is because, and you know, men are programmed to find the problem and fix it.
Yes.
And so a lot of times when women are communicating, they're not communicating for that reason. In fact, it's one of the biggest causes of problems between men and women is that, you know, but you told me you had this problem and I'm trying to help you. And she's like, no, I'm just venting and I want you to tell me how awful this other person was. And so I tell people, I said, okay, be very clear about what you want from your partner at the beginning of the conversation. If you want their help fixing a problem, be honest. If all you want them to do is go, yes, honey, that was really awful and I'm so sorry you had a bad day, let them know.
Absolutely, and I honestly feel that with whomever you're speaking, have that mini conversation right up front. I don't care if it's your best friend of 30 years. And as a matter of fact, sometimes that is the most important time to say, okay, I can hear that there's a lot of emotion here. How do you want me to listen to you? For venting or for problem solving or in another way, just let me know so that I can give you the support that you are really looking for.
Well, and that's so critical, and I'm so glad you said that, because I remember when my son was in middle school and he had some problem. And I don't know what made me do this, because both as a mom and a therapist, I'm usually jumping in and solving stuff. And he was having some difficulty, and I just stopped him. You know, well, actually, I waited till he got a pause in the conversation. And I said, do you want some help with that? Let me ask, what is it that you would want with this? And I think that that's a really important part of effective communication, effective listening, is How can I be supportive of you? How can I help you with this? What is it that you're looking for? As opposed to, well, let me just jump in with my sword and my shield and go to battle for you.
And Leslie, you're so right, because as you were saying that, I'm thinking to myself, if your child wants you to listen to them, just so that they can vent and get it off their chest, then you are literally listening differently. You're listening for themes. You're listening for strings that kind of run through. So when you finally do have a chance to say, I just want to tell you thank you so much for venting, and I don't want to solve this. This is your thing to solve. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you what I saw in what it was that you were saying. And, you know, my mom did that with me when I was about 14, and she said to me, sweetheart, it's very obvious that every single time you are at school and they make you do group work, it blows up in your face because you end up doing it all. But she, you know, she didn't solve it for me, but
right.
She pulled that string together and gave me some clarity that I didn't have before. And that actually was wonderful for me, and I think if more parents would listen from that point of view, if that's what the child wants, then they can give wisdom without solving the issue for the child.
Right, and and then we actually empower. We empower our children. We empower our partners. We empower people when we do that, as opposed to trying to solve the problems for them. You know, just pointing out, just like your mother did. Well, let me point out what I'm seeing. And you know, yes, I'm sitting here laughing about the dreaded group projects because you described my daughter to a T. She hates them for that very reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still do.
Oh, I know. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with communication expert Leslie Shore about the importance of listening when you and your partner disagree. And if this is a problem in your marriage, I invite you to stop and take a moment and get in contact with me and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Fantastic Relationship Breakthrough session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can give me a call at area code 919-924-0463. Now, back to this conversation about great listening, how to listen to succeed. So, you talk in your book about some phrases that should never be used. And like I was talking in the beginning about not using you in the first three words of a sentence. What are some of the phrases that should never be used and why?
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing up you. And one of the reasons I think it's so important is that you become totally defensive. The moment you become defensive, listening pretty much drops in half, because what you're listening for is things to disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, then the other person who really doesn't know that you're doing that is going, why is this thing going south?
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, as you know, it really, really, really does. So one of the things that I tell folks is, first of all, if you use absolute words, such as always, never, no one, everyone, all, all the time, this is something I see you doing. Now, it's not within the first three words I use the word you. But absolute words have a tendency, when you say it to someone else in terms of who they are or what their behavior is, when you use an absolute word, it doesn't give them a chance to grow. It doesn't allow them to see that you can see them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I say all the time is every single morning we wake up with a clean slate. or at least that's how it ought to be, especially in loving relationships. Otherwise, we do not give a person a chance to have personal growth. And so those words like always and never are things that are like daggers in the heart. Who knows if you've had an epiphany in the middle of the night? You know?
So, or worse yet, you turn your partner into the into the attorney who's going to find the one circumstance when that wasn't true, and you kind of lose credibility about, you know, here's the challenge that I have with what seems to happen frequently.
Yes, exactly. And it's an I. Here's the challenge I am having.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's more like, well, how can I help you with that challenge? Well, now that I'm seeing what you're saying, maybe there is something that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things is that, as you were saying, it's like, boy, anything in our relationship history can be brought back at any moment.
Ooh,
And when that happens, something 3 years ago that you thought was literally forgiven, dead, and buried, and it comes back, wow, that is a showstopper. And it is what I would consider one of the things that escalates a discussion into an argument and an argument into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I do know, and the verse is love knows no record of wrongs. If you keep a record of wrongs, that means you are never letting go of it, and you are never allowing that person to morph into, in your mind, morph into what they are working on changing to be more of themselves.
Well, yeah, and it's really kind of a challenge. And, you know, I'll be talking with one of my clients, and they'll say, well, you know, I'm over that. And I sit in my chair and I say very quietly, well, I'm going to respectfully disagree because of the amount of emotion that comes out when you're talking about this, when you're actually relating this story. It tells me that there's still some emotional attachment, which means as much as you want to be over it, you're not. But then it sits buried and comes flying out in the middle of something else, and your partner's like, well, wait a minute. I thought we put that to bed 3 years ago, and
mm-hmm. Yep, and there it is again.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I work with, and in my book, Listen to Succeed, I actually have an exercise on this, because emotionally laden words that attack dignity,
mm-hmm.
such as the word thoughtless or stubborn or inflexible or bossy or impulsive, depending on the person that you're saying it to,
mm-hmm.
those emotionally laden words that attack dignity are absolute no-nos. It's a way of putting someone so much on the defensive and literally deflating their self-worth that there's no hope for an adult-to-an-adult conversation. And in my book, the exercise that I have is take a week and figure out 10 words that make you see red, that make you really emotional and stop
mm-hmm.
listening.
Mm-hmm.
But then, here's the important part, figure out what age that became an issue and what was the circumstance.
Mm.
Because what happens is when that word is used, you are literally going back to the age at which it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
it is invisible to you until you do the exercise. When
right.
I was called ugly in fourth grade, anytime someone used that word on me until I figured it out, where I went was 10 years of age, and that's how I was responding. Not really that cool, you know? So
right, and then your partner's looking at you going, wait a minute, what happened to that full-grown person that I love? You're then it's you're acting like a two-year-old. I'm going, no. Which
right.
is, of course,
and
continues the... you know.
And I suggest that people in relationships do that list and hand it to the other person, because they, first of all, will learn a lot about the other person, even if they've been married for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they will actually know, wow, I never knew this was the case. I never mm-hmm. knew that's why your face changed.
Mm-hmm.
And neither did you, because you didn't realize it was one of those words that was making you stop listening and become more defensive.
Yeah, for me, it's anything that calls into question my competence. So, and it might not even be a specific word, but the last argument my husband and I had, which has been years, we don't fight, thank goodness, we have better ways of resolving things. But he, you know, I had misplaced something, and then he starts, well, did you look here? Did you look there? Did you? I say, really? Seriously? You are not treating me. and it went south fast.
Yep.
You know,
yes.
and he didn't to the point where he didn't even know what had hit him. It was like
right,
a massive explosion.
Right. And that's when my parents would use a timeout, because mm-hmm. they were such good communicators. As we were growing up, I think I heard 3 arguments, and not even really arguments, because if they were, they would take it, you know, somewhere
right.
else, because they didn't want the kids to be part of adult thinking and taking care of business. But they would do the timeout. They would mm-hmm. go somewhere else for 5 minutes, come back, and start laughing, because it was most of the time so
right.
silly what they were getting upset about.
So, you know, I mean, one of the things that I think really gets people, and, you know, and it's funny because they'll tell me, my clients will say that, you know, I just want my partner to listen to me. And my response is, you want them to listen or you want them to agree, because those are not the same things.
Right.
But you talk in your book about how someone can be heard without getting mean or loud. Because I think that's one of the things happens. It's like, well, you're not listening to me, so I'm just going to get louder, or I'm going to get nastier. Which, of course, then just completely makes it impossible for you to be taken seriously. But so,
well, it does.
What do you recommend?
One of the things that I think is important to understand why that's happening, and I believe it's happening because there is the feeling that there is a need to win.
Mm.
And that's when discussions turn into arguments and fights, because
mm-hmm.
the need to win is actually overcoming the value of the relationship. So if you put the relationship first and understand that the discussion that you're having is to come to a solution, and the solution is more important than winning, you will never escalate into an argument or into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that some folks say, well, they tell me that, you know, fighting is good for a relationship. And I'm going, that is such a myth. Because if you have great communication tools and rules, you will never get to that point. And one of those things is never raise your voice, because it is a power play. You want mm-hmm. to gain power by raising your voice. The opposite is so much more effective, that when you quiet down and you keep your voice level, even if the other person is raising theirs, they're eventually going to come down to mm-hmm. what I call the adult voice instead of the parental voice, the parental outside voice.
Right.
And so that is a trick when something is beginning to go south.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure of where you are in terms of how you are sounding. Are you sounding in the adult, calm voice? It's hugely, hugely
right.
important.
Well, and it's so funny because it as this fight that my husband and I had was escalating, he told me to quit yelling, and of course I told him, in a very loud voice, I told him I wasn't yelling, because if I had been, one of my children, because my children were asleep at the time, and I figured one of them would have come out of the room. And then of course the next day my son says to me, why were you and Dad yelling at each other last
night? Right, exactly.
But But then he did exactly what you're talking about. I mean, he just looked at me and very calmly just said, I'm not doing this anymore. And I kept trying to go. And he just was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And it's like, dang, it really does work. Shoot.
It does. You know, it's so interesting because when I coach businesses in terms of when they've got salespeople or government agencies when they're behind a counter, and I teach them how to keep their wits about them when all about are losing pairs. And one of the most important things is, where is your voice? Are you calm? And are your facial expressions and body language in agreement with that calmness?
Right.
So that the person across from you, if they really want to mirror what's going on, they're going to come down and be that calm person also. You just, it's hard to stay there when someone else is being the opposite, but boy, oh boy, it really does. It definitely works.
Right. And I so like you pointing out beforehand, because it every time I hear this, it makes me want to jump up and down and, you know, go crazy. When people say, well, you know, all couples, even happy couples, fight. It's the way you fight. And it's like, and I've had this conversation with several other guests, and I suppose it depends on the term fight. But for me, fight always implies high emotion, harsh tones, potentially, you know, bad choice of words, calling people names, or you know, because I tell people you can't once it's out there, you can't take it back. You can apologize from here to eternity, but your words are still bouncing around in my head.
Absolutely.
You know, and it isn't the case that if you don't fight, that means one of you is repressing something. It's like, no, you're just grown up and you've learned how to solve problems productively.
Right. And I look at it this way. When two boxers get into a ring, they are fighting. That's what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at that, are you really doing that kind of fight? And if you're doing that kind of fight verbally, it is violent and it is aggressive. So if you kind of metaphorically look at what happens in a ring, you're gut punching someone. That is not where you want to be if you're in any kind of relationship, where the relationship itself is the important thing and not winning.
Absolutely. And so, Leslie, can you please tell people where they can learn more about you, your book, How to Listen to Succeed, How to Be Much More Effective Communicators?
Sure. My website is listentosucceed.com, and it has a number of things in there, including workshops and my book and the Listening Effectiveness Assessment, which allows you to figure out what the top barriers for you are. And I find it very helpful, especially in couples who don't really realize that their barriers are completely different than those of the other person in the coupledom. And so I like having that on the website. It's actually available to take electronically, so it's very quick and
easy. Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
Great.
And the book is available there, and the book is also available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
So, you know, in reality, you and your partner are going to disagree. That is a given. But whether it turns into a fight is really, really up to you. In truth, if you're fighting with each other, it's because you're choosing to. And you know, disagreeing in a more productive way is possible. You've heard how to do that today. So the question becomes, what would help you to do that? So I suggest keep listening for more ways to improve your marriage. And until next week, stay loving.